Neither podcast can live while the other survives, but if that podcast is the official podcast of filmbook.com, then maybe we can make an exception. Hi, it's Mike Smith, and welcome to the Filmbook Cast. Joining me, as always, is he who must not be named.
I can't say my name now.
I thought I might trip you up on that, and I did not, so good job. That's Mike DiCriccio.
Yeah, that's good. No.
I got attacked by Death Eaters. That's what happens in Death
Eaters. Now we're on the darkest timeline.
If you've never listened to a film bookcast before, first we start with some film news, and then we move on to some discussions where Mike and I each discuss whatever piece of media we've been consuming lately. And then after that, we will move on to our featured review. This week we are reviewing the new film from director David Yates, written by J.K. Rowling, and I suppose the ninth film in the Harry Potter universe, Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them. I very much look forward to the sequel, Fantastic Beasts and Why We Find Them, to be followed by the Oscar-nominated Fantastic Beasts of the Southern Wild, which will then result in the porn parody Fantastic Breasts
and, wow.
Where to Find Them.
Beautiful.
I had a lot of time to think about this intro.
I'm so proud of you.
And I'm glad I utilized every aspect of it. That'd be cool, Mike. Are you excited to get into the Fantastic Beasts? Are you ready to find Fantastic Beasts?
Yeah, I'm excited to deep dive into Harry Potter stuff with you.
Yeah,
let you guide me through the Harry Potter deep dive.
Yes, as we've talked about before, I'm a pretty big Harry Potter fan, and you're a pretty casual Harry Potter fan, right?
Basically.
It's the perfect mix of people. You know, if you're just a casual fan of Harry Potter, you got Mike's perspective to look forward to. If you're an expert like me, you got my perspective to look forward to. This is a podcast for all people. Unless you don't like Harry Potter, in which case I can't help you. But before we get into our Fantastic Beasts review, Mike, let's get into some film news. Let's get into some film news, Mike, and we begin with some Marvel news, as we always do, right? That's kind of our thing.
That's right. When I first wake up in the morning, I wonder, what is Marvel doing today?
Well, that's why we have this podcast. Other than reviewing movies, it's like a Marvel news delivery service.
That's right.
For our listeners. If you may recall that a while back, Marvel was trying to get an Inhumans movie to be made. They actually officially announced an Inhumans movie a while ago to be released in the year 2019, which is some made-up future year that does not exist.
If it even exists.
Exactly. As far as I know, 2019 is the year that Blade Runner takes place in and nothing else.
Hopefully the world makes it that far.
Yeah, well, Inhumans won't make it that far because Inhumans was taken off the schedule. Nice.
Burn.
Marvel took the Inhumans movie off the schedule a while ago. And, you know, people were wondering, well, what's going to happen with Inhumans, you know? And it was weird because Marvel has been trying to position Inhumans as the next big thing in the comics for a while. They don't have the rights to the X-Men in the movies. So the Inhumans would kind of fill the void that the X-Men use. You know, they're this kind of like outcast team people look down on, but then these guys with powers. And so in the comics, they've been getting a huge push. And even on TV, on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., the Inhumans have played a major role. Well, now Marvel's Inhumans is going to be on TV instead of a movie. It's going to be an 8-episode TV series on ABC premiering in fall 2017.
That's the best of both worlds, I guess.
I guess. I mean, I feel like it's a fall from grace a bit.
Yes, that's true.
I think Marvel was really hoping for Inhumans to be the new kind of X-Men. And then they pulled it. It's such a weird kind of out there concept. All the characters are very, like, even for Marvel, which at this point is taking a lot of, like, lesser-known characters. You know, they make movies like Guardians of the Galaxy and stuff like that. Inhumans is lesser-known. and they're weird. Like, we were talking earlier about that the leader of the Inhumans is called Black Bolt, who is this guy who doesn't talk. He has a dog named Lockjaw, who is just like this giant dog beast thing. It's a weird thing, you know? It's a weird concept. And I'm sure it could have been an interesting movie, but I'm not sure how mainstream it could have been. I think Marvel has proven that they're pretty good at taking any concept, turning it into a mainstream movie. But I think Inhumans might have posed a specific challenge for them.
Yeah, especially because I think that they were, like we said, trying to maneuver Inhumans to replace the X-Men in the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. The X-Men exist. Like...
There are already X-Men movies and stuff, yeah. And
right.
So just because the X-Men aren't in the Marvel Universe doesn't mean we're not getting our X-Men fix, you know?
Yeah, and I don't think the X-Men are going to be replaced by anything ever. Like,
yeah.
I get why they're doing it, but it's hard to get people on board with that idea.
Exactly. The X-Men are iconic, you know? Even right. Like, we've been through thick and thin with the X-Men. We've been through great movies. We've been through terrible movies. But at the end of the day, you know, like, we know who Wolverine is. We have no fucking idea who Black Bolt is, you know? Like,
yeah.
So I think this is probably the better route to do if they're going to do anything with the Inhumans. And the first two episodes of this 8-episode series are going to be premiering in IMAX theaters for a special 2-week event before the show has its official premiere on ABC, which is pretty cool. The episodes are actually going to be shot in IMAX cameras.
That's awesome. Yeah, I'm a big fan of these, like, event things. Like, we got to see the Hateful Eight Roadshow stuff.
Right.
And so that's cool that they're doing that. So at least... If you are an Inhumans fan, you may get to experience them on the big screen.
Yes, that's
true. For the 19 of you.
I think it'll be really interesting to see the audience drop off after the first two episodes premiere, and they're like these really cool cinematic adventure, you know, it's got the IMAX cameras and everything.
Right.
Then episode 3 premieres and it looks like shit. You know, it looks like Agents of
Shield. And it's just a flashback episode.
The next 6 episodes are just flashbacks to the first 2 episodes. So I mean, I you know, I'm tentatively excited for this. You know, here's the thing. You know, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is a show that I have had a hit and miss relationship with, love or hates kind of thing. But I think their Inhuman stuff is mostly pretty bad. So
ooh, rough.
But I think this show will have a lot more creative freedom with the Inhumans, because when S.H.I.E.L.D. was doing the Inhumans, they thought there was going to be a movie, so they couldn't use any of the cool Inhumans characters like Black Bolt.
Right, because they have to save them for the movie.
Yeah, and so now they can just throw all these things in the TV show, and we'll see what happens. You know, I'm tentatively excited for this. But let's get off that. Let's move on to some other news. I did want to mention that Robert Eggers, who's the director of The Witch, is going to be remaking Nosferatu, which is a pretty enticing idea, I think.
That is. Those are two things I didn't know I needed to go together. But now I do.
Yeah, so that's pretty cool. I'm excited for Robert Eggers. I think he's working on another horror movie as well. But The Witch is one of the best movies of the year, I think. Like, it's probably going to make my top 10. I think it'll almost definitely make my top 10 when we do our top 10, which is almost it's like a month away.
It's almost time.
Yeah, it's almost time to start thinking about that, Mike. Probably is time to start thinking about it. You know, make your list. You know,
what a world we live in.
So that's pretty cool. I'm pretty excited for that. And then Gavin O'Connor, who is the director of The Accountant, which you saw and kind of liked. You know, he's also the director of Warrior, which I really liked. He directed Miracle with Kurt Russell. Remember that movie?
I do.
Fun time. He's going to be rebooting The Green Hornet to be like a darker and grittier version of The Green Hornet. And unlike Robert Eggers directing Nosferatu, when I heard this sentence together, I was like, I don't want this. I don't need this. A dark, gritty Green Hornet. You know, it's
correct.
It's like, you know, I didn't even really like the Seth Rogen movie that much, The Green Hornet, a couple years ago.
I didn't see that one. But this just draws too much parallel to the Snyderverse with this. And the Snyderverse is real now, and, like, I can't.
Yeah. The Snyderverse has merged with our own universe, yeah.
Yeah, like, the joke is gone, and now it's like it's just the Snyderverse. I don't need a dark, gritty Green Hornet.
This is what people watch for entertainment in the Snyderverse.
Yeah, exactly.
We don't need that at all. So that's something I didn't want to mention just because it's notable, but not something I care about that much. Something that I do think is very cool, though. A few weeks ago, we were talking about Tim Miller leaving Deadpool, and I was saying, well, you know what? Tim Miller was fine, you know, whatever. I don't really care that he's leaving. This is a chance for Deadpool to get somebody who's really cool and, like, a really interesting director, you know, somebody who can move on and do some really cool action stuff. And that's just what they did. I'm very excited about this, Mike. Deadpool 2 has hired David Leitch to direct that movie. And David Leitch was the co-director of a little movie called John Wick, which we are big fans of. So basically, John Wick was directed by David Leitch and Chad Stahelski. And after that movie, they kind of split into their own things. David Leitch is currently directing a different movie right now. I forget the name of that movie, but he is directing his own thing. Chad Stahelski is directing John Wick 2. But David Leitch is now doing Deadpool 2, which is very exciting. I think this is the best possible timeline for Deadpool 2.
Absolutely.
You know?
I love that that's become, like, no matter what. What is either the Snyderverse or the best timeline.
This is an internet podcast. There is no room for a middle ground.
Correct. I definitely agree with you that, like we said, Deadpool lacked that directorial touch, and especially with an action movie and what they did manage to do with John Wick and the fight choreography, and I am really excited to see what they can do with Deadpool with that type of fight choreography.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I just look at John Wick and I look at Deadpool and I'm like, that's exactly what I want Deadpool to be. Like, that's
that's what he is too. Like, it's perfect.
So that's very exciting. And then I did want to also mention that Chad Stahelski, the other co-director of John Wick, who's doing John Wick 2, just signed on today to direct a remake of Highlander. Which is not something I felt like I needed. I mean, don't they know that there can only be one?
Yeah. So let's make 5 movies.
But you know, Chad Stahelski doing like John Wick director and directing John Wick 2, like, I'm down. You know, we'll see what happens with John Wick 2. Maybe David Leitch was the true genius behind all of them. But from what I saw, John Wick 2 at Comic-Con, it looked very good. So, you know, Chad Stahelski, I'm still on board with this guy. And you know, Highlander, I'm excited for now, which is not something that I've said before in the past ever.
that's a sentence you never thought you'd say.
Yeah, I do hope they keep the soundtrack by Queen.
Oh, you know, what's even the point if you don't then?
Exactly.
but these are two, it's interesting to think of action movie directors that are like, these are stunt guys that come from this background as people to keep an eye out for. But these two are, so far, they're based on just John Wick. So we'll see what happens with these new movies.
Yeah. So that's very exciting for fans of John Wick. And for, I think, Deadpool 2 fans, you really lucked out on this one. You know, people were decrying Tim Miller, like, oh, that great creative voice Tim Miller has left.
Yeah.
But now David Leitch is doing it. I think he's perfect for this movie, so that's very exciting. So that's it for film news, Mike. Let's move on into our discussion. Watch this. These are my discussions. Just when I thought I said all I could say, my buddy and I talk about movies we see. These are my discussions. There is so much to see, you and me. So we're going to talk about movies for our discussions. All right, it is time for our discussions on Film Bookcast. Mike, what do you have to discuss with us today?
So today I actually have an abundance of discussions for me.
An abundance?
For me, I have 2 movies.
I mean, so the first, plural is more than one, so I would say that's an abundance for you.
It counts for me.
Yeah.
I have Hacksaw Ridge, which I saw. It stars Andrew Garfield, directed by Academy Award winner of director of Braveheart.
Yeah, the Academy Award winning director of Braveheart. We don't have to say his name. Also
known as Mel Gibson.
Sure.
It tells a true story about a Seventh Day Adventist, I think. I don't know. It's been a while. I should have checked that. But
religious dude.
Yeah, very religious guy who enlists for World War II, and it's his religion prevents him from holding a weapon and taking life. And the first half of the movie is that whole struggle of him going through the process of being able to join the military without holding a weapon, and you know whether it would create chaos in the ranks because he wasn't following orders and all this stuff. And then the whole second part of the movie is him. They go to, I don't remember. Okinawa, I believe.
Okay.
Probably should have double checked that, but that's okay.
That's fine.
You're just going to move on. And it turns into a really intense, gory World War II movie. Seeing the rest of Mel Gibson's movies, it's kind of expected, especially Passion of the Christ.
Right.
But this, it finds the beauty in all of it in really odd ways. There's lots of really beautiful tracking shots and camera work and cinematography that goes into this, war is hell, like literal hellscape of body parts and insanity. It's a interesting take on the war movie. It wasn't just a straight ahead World War II movie, which I was half expecting. So that said, I did enjoy it. It's really powerful. It's intense. So people should check it out.
Cool.
And then the other one that I want to talk about is Arrival.
Yes, I've heard very good things about Arrival.
Yeah, Arrival, I feel like it was sort of like a sleeper thing for a little bit. Like, I had seen a couple trailers about for it or so, heard some right. stuff, and then it came out and everyone's blew everyone away. And it did. There were many manly tears shed during this movie. it stars Amy Adams, Jeremy Renner, Forest Whitaker. There's a pretty solid cast. Directed by Denis Villeneuve. I didn't look up the writer. I think he might have wrote it, actually. No, I don't think so. That's okay.
quality stuff.
Hey, man, look, I'm panicking. I have two movies to talk about.
You're getting all your facts mixed up and everything. Arrival is about World War II.
The classic science fiction movie, Hacksaw Ridge.
Religious aliens who are...
yeah, but Arrival... Yeah, Arrival is a science fiction movie about what happens when aliens arrive on Earth. And the Amy Adams plays a linguist who's tasked with trying to decipher the alien language and speak to them, communicate with them. And the entire movie is about the power of language and communication. And in the Snyderverse that we live in now, seeing this movie that is about hope and overcoming adversity and working together as a species and what it means to be human and all of these really powerful emotional things. And I saw this the week after, like just after the election. So it was really cathartic and it was really intense and I liked it a lot. And this is definitely top 10 movies
okay.
for me. This is definitely that material. And Denis Villeneuve is quickly between Sicario and this movie has quickly become one of my favorite directors that I've noticed. So I'm excited to see that he's going to be directing Blade Runner 2049,
yes.
despite its awful title.
Yeah, slam!
Boom, got him.
Take that.
Hot takes for discussions. So yeah, I'm excited to keep an eye out for him, especially Arrival and Sicario did this as well with its with the music by Johan Johansson. they managed to work such tension through every scene. I think I remember talking about when we reviewed, or I talked about Sicario. Did we do it? We might have done a whole episode on that. I don't remember.
We didn't do a whole episode on Sicario, but we definitely talked about it.
I think we talked about it, yeah. Where it was one of those, like, oh, crap, I haven't been breathing. Like, one of those right. one of those kinds of movies. And Arrival has that again. They managed to okay. work really intense music and the way shots are set up and everything, that there's just tension and you're scared for no, like, just because of what's happening, even though nothing scary is happening. So it's really, I really liked Arrival and cool. More people should see it.
Yeah. Nice. There was a, Dave Chen from Slash Homecast tweeted out something a while back that has always stuck with me with Denis Villeneuve's films. His tweet was this, step one, take the title of any Denis Villeneuve film. Step two, insert the question, but who are the real blank? And step three, that is the theme of said film. So it's like, who is the real enemy? Yeah. Who are the real prisoners? Yep. Who is the real Sicario, meaning Hitman?
Yeah.
Who is really arriving?
You know? Oh, man, it's so good, though. But for real, though, that works a lot for this movie. it's really good.
Good. Yeah, I'm very excited to see it. Opposite day, because I didn't have any movies to watch to discuss today. I had not gotten around to watching a ton of movies over the last 2 weeks, but I was able to read some comics, Mike. So I'll talk about those.
It's a piece of media.
That's why I say whatever piece of media we've been consuming lately, because sometimes you just can't watch a movie. I did want to talk about this. This is the Dead No More, The Clone Conspiracy, which is the new Spider-Man event in Marvel Comics. And it's in which this character called the Jackal is bringing dead characters from Spider-Man comics back to life, including Dr. Octopus and Gwen Stacy. This is happening across multiple comic series, like Amazing Spider-Man, Prowler, and Silk. It's a lot of fun. It is a really enjoyable time. Dan Slott, who's been writing Spidey for years, is kind of cultivating this story. He's a guy that I trust, and I loved Spider-Verse, which he also wrote. So I'm all in on this one. I've read I've read like 3 issues of it so far. There's like there's a separate Clone Conspiracy comic, and then that's tying into the Amazing Spider-Man comics, then there's the Silk comics and the Prowler comics. They're all kind of tying in, and it's going to be like a 5-month event or something. So it's going from October to like February. I'm really enjoying it so far. Very cool concept, and I'm digging it. And then I also wanted to mention Astonishing Ant-Man, which just ended its run. I was very upset about this when I learned this. But Nick Spencer, who also writes the Captain America comics, he's the guy who made Captain America a Nazi. He's the writer of these Ant-Man comics. And these Ant-Man comics I've been following since issue one of when they were just called Ant-Man, which they started around the time the movie came out. And this was a really funny comic that just kind of existed on kind of the fringes of the Marvel Universe. Like it's about Scott Lang, how he moves to Florida to be with his daughter Cassie, and while he's there, he opens up a security company in which all of his employees are D-list villains.
Oh my god!
So, for example, one of them is Grizzly, who is a man in a bear costume.
Sure.
And the last couple of issues deal with the trial of Ant-Man, where Scott has to avoid going to jail, and his lawyer is She-Hulk. Just a really, really enjoyable comic that I'm very bummed to see end. The door is left open for more with the character down the road. No word yet if Nick Spencer would be involved with that or not, but I hope he is, because these have been really funny, just enjoyable comics. They reference a lot of pop culture, and they like has a very sarcastic tone, and it's just a really enjoyable time. So Astonishing Ant-Man just ended, so shout out to that. If you can catch up on those, I highly recommend it. But that is all I have to discuss today, Mike. Usually I have, like... You know,
usually
you
got a lot.
Usually I got movies on top of movies, and this time I'm running dry. But that means we just
that's all right.
That means we can just get to our review faster, Mike.
Yeah, after our 9-hour marathon Doctor Strange episode,
yeah.
We'll give you a short one.
There we go. All right, guys, let's get into our featured review of Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them.
You're an interesting man, Mr. Scamander. Just like your suitcase, I think there's much more to you than meets the eye. Kicked out of Hogwarts for endangering human life with a beast. Yet one of your teachers argued strongly against your expulsion. I wonder, what makes Albus Dumbledore so fond of you, Mr. Scamander?
First trip to America?
Yes.
Must get that fixed.
Anything edible in there?
No.
Any livestock?
No.
Welcome to New York.
All right, that was from the trailer for Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them. That is the new film from director David Yates, written by J.K. Rowling, and it stars Eddie Redmayne, Catherine Waterston, Dan Fogler, Alison Siddall, Carmen Ejogo, Colin Farrell, Ezra Miller, Samantha Morton, Ron Perlman, and John Voight, among others. And the IMDb plot synopsis of this movie is not even a synopsis. It is... In no way is this a synopsis for this
even movie. By IMDb standards?
Even by IMDb standards. This is the synopsis from IMDb. The adventures of writer Newt Scamander in New York's secret community of witches and wizards 70 years before Harry Potter reads his book in school.
What? Oh my god.
And like,
that's pretty terrible.
I guess like technically that's true, but also like... Newt Scamander's barely in this. Like, I mean, he's in the movie, but he like has no effect on what's happening in this movie. And also, like, it has nothing to do with the fact that Harry Potter will eventually read his book.
Nope.
That doesn't even happen in the book, like in the Harry Potter books. We'll get into all that. I'm a huge, huge fan of Harry Potter. This is a franchise that I grew up with. It's a world that I know very, very well. You know, I've read and reread these books so many times. I was there opening night for every movie. I actually own Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them, the textbook.
Look at that.
It's here. You're looking at
it
right
now.
Yeah.
Right
now. Just to prove it to you. It is in my house. It is in my hand. And it's not a... The movie isn't exactly a adaptation of the book because it physically can't be. This is a... This is... Like, I would say 9/10 of this is a glossary of magical animals. Like,
yeah, it's meant to be like a bestiary, right? That's like what the...
Yeah. The book that they released, this was released in 2001, which came out... So it was after Goblet of Fire was released as a book. Yeah, this is supposed to be Harry Potter's textbook, and it's fun because there's, like, scribbles and doodles throughout of... of like Harry and Ron and Hermione. Like it reads like an actual kid's textbook.
Okay, that's pretty cool.
And I did want to mention this because this made me laugh. And I was kind of like leafing through the book. Like before this thing. So I didn't want to read this because it made me laugh. It's at the beginning of it, it says, "This book belongs to Harry Potter," and then scrawled underneath it, it says, "Shared by Ron Weasley because his fell apart." And then scrawled underneath it, it says, "Why don't you buy a new one then?" And then scrawled underneath that, "Write on your own book, Hermione." And then scrawled underneath that, "You bought all those dung bombs on Saturday. You could have bought a new book instead."
Wow.
And then scrawled underneath that, "Dung bombs rule."
Ron is right.
He's right. Dung bombs do rule. But anyway, when it was announced that this movie was happening and that J.K. Rowling herself was actually writing the screenplay for it, that's what was really exciting to me. You know, I was excited to explore like part of this magical world that we hadn't seen before. Rowling's greatest strength is her world building, I think. And in the books, you occasionally hear about the world outside Hogwarts in England, but you never really see any of it. And so right. That's not something I felt like I needed to see, but if it was done well, it could prove to be really interesting. So, Mike, I mean, you're coming at this from the perspective of somebody who's not as huge of a Harry Potter fan, but is still somebody who likes it, right?
Yeah. As we said earlier, much more casual. I have only read Prisoner of Azkaban, so I've only read the third book. I've seen all the movies, however, so I do enjoy the movies. I do like the world. I am, you know, through cultural osmosis, familiar with it. So that said, it's a similar thing, though. Like you had said, I was excited by the prospect of being able to go to 1920s New York with this secret underground wizard world.
Right.
Because those are the best parts of, I think, like you said, the universe is this, you know, when we walk in, we go to platform 9 3/4. Like, that's such an exciting moment.
Right.
When we run through the wall and now we're in the wizard world and it's like, this is awesome. And I wanted that in 1920s New York and it happened.
So there you go. I mean, so in my opinion, like I'm coming at this from a fairly big fan. I think Fantastic Beasts delivers on what I was hoping for a little while. I would say for about 2/3 of its runtime, it's a pretty fun, kind of lightweight story. Kind of similar to, I would say, like an expanded universe Star Wars story. You know, you're following these characters who you don't really know in this part of the world that you haven't seen before, in this case, 1920s New York. So the world is very familiar, but you're seeing it from a different perspective, and that can be cool. And there is some cool stuff happening in this movie. Unfortunately for me, I think this movie really nosedives as it heads towards its climax. To me, it felt like a totally uninspired rehash of things we've seen before, with a lot of unnecessary franchise setup, a lot of dumb twists, and it expects us to care about these characters that have been pretty thinly drawn throughout, I think. I don't know, Mike, where were you coming at this from? Like, how were you reacting to this movie as it was?
Yeah, I have a pretty similar sort of thought on the whole thing. For a good portion of the film, it is a silly, lighthearted, fun, you know, we're chasing monsters through New York that got out by accident and there's wizard stuff happening and it's like, you know, a good time. But then we have to turn and pivot for the next 5 movies. And we have to set up the villain. We have to set up what that story is going to be.
Yeah.
We have to justify why we're all mad at the villain. We have to like do all this crazy stuff that takes away from, we're chasing this giant rhino thing through the Central Park Zoo.
Like, exactly.
Like, and that was fun. Like, those things are fun.
Yeah. It felt like there were a lot of different movies kind of fighting for attention, in this Fantastic Beasts movie. At a certain point, I gotta wonder, like, is the next one even going to be called Fantastic Beasts and whatever? Because I feel like the beasts bear so little impact on what happens in this movie. You know?
Yeah.
Like, everything significant that happens in this movie is like having to do with, Spoiler Man. And spoiler thing that is
irrelevant to the other story.
Yeah, I feel like we'll get into spoilers fairly quickly today because I feel like there's a lot of plot stuff that I want to talk about. But I will just say that a lot of the climax is so like it's so much like setting up for things that will happen later, and it does it in such a clumsy way. I think like it's not like for the first like hour and 20 minutes or so, I was actually pretty impressed with how the movie felt very standalone. Like, it kind of used the time period as a backdrop, and so there's stuff going on. Like, it mentions how Grindelwald is rising to power in the background, and, like, that's kind of used as a backdrop for what's going on. So you have, like, context for the time period, but it's not, like, it has no bearing on what's going on in, like, Newt Scamander's story. But, you know, like, can you name a single characteristic of Newt Scamander besides, like, likes animals and is British? Like,
no.
I think he's the least...
He's shy. That's about it.
Yeah, he's the least interesting character in his own movie, or what's supposed to be his own movie. I think it was originally supposed to be his movie, but it's like they decided halfway through they wanted to change the movie that they were making, you know?
Yeah. It definitely... That's the thing. It definitely reeks of the franchise that it's going to be, and that's not a good thing, I don't think.
Yeah, you know, it results in this very weird variance in tone, where like half the movie is this lighthearted, goofy kid stuff, you know, looking for the Niffler or like the Rhino in Central Park, and then the other half is this dark, you know, complete with social commentary and characters get killed off by Sam Raimi's camera from Evil Dead.
Like, you can't do that while I'm drinking. First off. Second, you're 100% correct.
That was the first thing I thought of, and I thought to myself, I'm going to make Mike laugh so hard. And success.
Well done.
But yeah, look, the Harry Potter movies, they grew up with their audience. So like the lighter fare in the first movie eventually gives way to the darker fare in the later movies. You don't do it all in one movie.
Yeah, it took 7 movies to get there.
Yeah, you know, you switch it back and forth, you know, and that took place over 10 years. So like, you know, kids who were 10 when the first one came out were 20 when the last one came out. And it's like, yeah, like they're ready for this.
Right.
You know? So the result is that like neither of the movies that this one wants to be feels kind of complete. You know, I would have rather they just done a lighthearted movie about magical animals without tying it into like a larger, darker narrative. Or they could have just done the larger, darker narrative and not done the kiddie animal movies. I just want them to make a choice. You know.
Yeah.
Because
no, I agree.
Because I think like Newt Scamander's story ends up feeling just completely tangential to what's going on, and that's a shame because A, it's supposed to be his movie. The movie is called Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them. And B, I was genuinely having fun with this stuff for a while. You know, it's pretty good. I didn't like Redmayne. I thought he was bad.
I thought he did okay, but I see where you're saying. He definitely, that character feels very useless.
Yeah. I mean, Redmayne is, I'm coming at, like, I don't like Redmayne that much to begin with. But, like, I like him in Jupiter Ascending. You know, he's great in that movie.
Yeah.
That's the one Eddie Redmayne performance I can look at and be like, you know what? He's trying something totally out there, and I gotta respect it.
Yeah.
You know, I'm just not a fan of him in general. But I enjoyed the creatures. You know, the creatures are fun, and like the ensemble was pretty decent. I think, especially Dan Fogler. I think he comes off the best in this movie. you know, it feels truly standalone, which I liked. And there is some variety in the ensemble, which I also like. You know, rather than have a group that is all just regular wizards. Which is what you have in Harry Potter. You have one who's a muggle, or nomadge, as they're called in this movie, who is just kind of along for the ride, the Stan Fogler's character. And you have one who's a legilimens, which means that she can read minds. And that's something that the fifth Harry Potter movie explores, because Snape is trying to teach Harry how to block Voldemort from reading his mind and that kind of stuff.
Right.
So that's something that is mentioned before, but it's not something that we've seen in practice that much, and that's kind of cool. So this allows the movie to kind of have different interactions than the previous Harry Potter movies, where everybody just kind of knows what the wizarding world is. Or like in that case, I mean, Harry is a newcomer to the wizarding world. So like you can have people explain stuff to him and it'd be like, okay. And in this movie, you kind of have Dan Fogler being that character of like, I'm the muggle. Please explain things to me.
Please exposit to me.
Otherwise, I mean, David Yates, who directed the last 4 Harry Potter movies, I think he does fine here. But there's not that much going on that's super visually interesting, and in a world that is meant to depict magic, that's kind of a big deal, right?
Yeah, I think there's it has fun with a lot of the stuff that it's stuff we had seen in the Harry Potter movies, right, where
it,
you know,
but you put it in like a new setting is what you're saying.
Right. Yeah. Well, I was just gonna say, you know, the stuff that I think setting the table. And, you know, the napkins come flying over and the dish. Right. It's like stuff we had seen already, but it's still fun.
Yes.
And it makes sense for this, the first half of this movie, that's the lighthearted, silly stuff, to have those things. I agree that there's nothing extraordinary about what we're shown, I guess, if that makes sense.
I mean,
or the way we're shown it, at least.
Yeah, like I liked Yates as a director for the last 4 Potter movies, and I feel like this one might suffer because he was also making The Legend of Tarzan at the same time. I didn't see that. I heard it was bad. So maybe both movies suffered from that result. Even then, no one has topped Alfonso Cuarón in the direction of the magical world. Like, The Prisoner of Azkaban, like, just looks awesome. Like, it looks really cool. And there's so much going on in Prisoner of Azkaban, like magical stuff happening. Like even just like the background of scenes, you'll see people like doing things that you won't even notice like the first couple times you watch the movie. It's cool. So, you know, shout out to Prisoner of Azkaban. It's the best one. which I found, I've been reading a lot of like Harry Potter stuff over the past few weeks, like people writing about Harry Potter online. There is a lot of disagreement about what the best Harry Potter movie is.
Really?
Yeah, there is no real consensus. I've always thought that Prisoner of Azkaban was like universally recognized as the best one, because maybe that's just because I think it's the best one.
Because your opinion is the law. Right?
Exactly. But it was surprising to me that a lot of people don't like Prisoner of Azkaban because it cuts out a lot of stuff that was in the book, and kind of streamlines it to be like a real movie. not to disparage the other Harry Potter movies, but they occasionally do feel like way too faithful adaptations, whereas they could, you know, expand and do other stuff. And so I think the David Yates movies actually do succeed in kind of being their own thing a little bit. Like the Deathly Hallows Part 1 adds like the dancing scene, and Half-Blood Prince has the attack on the Burrow, and that's all like new and original stuff, and that's cool. And that's kind of what excited me about Fantastic Beasts, is that it's not based on any book. So you won't have you won't have anything to compare it to, you know, and so that is something at least. And so you're getting like this totally new vision of the Wizarding World from J.K. Rowling, and that is very exciting for Harry Potter fans. And I will also say there's a lot of interesting stuff going on in this movie in terms of racism and systematic persecution, and that's something the Potter movies and books have always tackled pretty head on. But again, it's part of like one of the two or three movies. That is kind of stuffed in here, and it's not really given enough room to breathe and be like a fully formed idea. But yeah, I don't know. Do you want to get into spoilers, Mike?
I think we should probably get into more specific things.
Yeah, there are some very specific things we should get into. So let's get into spoilers for Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them, starting right now. All right, let's get into spoilers for Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them, starting right now. Johnny Depp's appearance as Grindelwald is so fucking dumb. Like, I don't know. Where were you on that? Like, are you in agreement with me that that was stupid, or did you like that? Like,
I liked the first one, quote unquote. The opening credits sort of, we get that scene of a bunch of wizards literally getting blown apart, which I was like, that was unexpected. And we see the back of his head.
Okay, yeah.
Which I was like, oh, that's an awesome way. Like,
that was cool.
To be a cameo, that's cool. But then he like shows up at the end and says something that I couldn't understand. And I was like, whatever. Great, I guess.
Yeah, no, it's so here's the thing. Grindelwald is like the Voldemort before Voldemort, right? He's like Wizard Hitler. You know, he's literally...
Oh my god!
I mean, Voldemort is kind of already Wizard Hitler, but like
we're living in that world, right?
But Grindelwald is known, to Harry Potter fans. They don't really mention him that much in the movies, I don't think. They probably mention him in Deathly Hallows.
Someone who's casual, I had never heard of him until you had told me about it. So
yeah, that's the thing. It's so weird to me that this is like they're capitalizing on the Dumbledore Grindelwald thing in the movies, because it's like the Dumbledore Grindelwald thing isn't really mentioned that much in the movies. And it's like, you know, people who read the books know about it. Even then, it's like if you read the books like once or something, like you might not remember it. It's not something that's like hugely important to your understanding of the books. to know about Dumbledore and Grindelwald. So it's weird that they're kind of hinging this entire franchise.
Yeah.
Based around this. But for those uninitiated, Grindelwald is basically Wizard Hitler. He was friends with Dumbledore. He's like a dark wizard who was friends with Dumbledore back in the day before he lost his way. He was involved in a duel with Dumbledore and Dumbledore's brother Aberforth, which ended up killing Dumbledore's sister Ariana. And then he went into hiding. And so this movie supposedly takes place after that duel, because they actually do reference that duel. At one point, they don't mention Dumbledore by name when they're talking about the duel, but they like Newt Scamander says something like, "I was there with an Obscurus. I saw an Obscurus go, and like some girl died." Right? He's talking to Ezra Miller when he's a cloud. And so Grindelwald goes into hiding, and then he starts to become more powerful.
wait, that's the okay. No, okay. Yeah.
And then in 1945, he has a big duel with Dumbledore, which he loses. Dumbledore beats him, and Grindelwald actually held the Elder Wand at the time, which was one of the Deathly Hallows that Voldemort was after in Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows. So Dumbledore ends up getting the Elder Wand from Grindelwald, and that's how Voldemort got it from Dumbledore, and then Harry got it from Voldemort, and then Harry destroyed it.
There we go.
Yeah.
All right, we don't need that 9 movies. We're done. Story's over.
Yep, we don't need Fantastic Beasts 2 through 5.
Yeah.
We're good. I think Johnny Depp's appearance was so dumb. Everything about that twist was really dumb. That Colin Farrell was Grindelwald all along. Because it's meant to give us this kind of like, oh shit, that's Grindelwald moment. But it's also the first time we've seen Grindelwald. So why would we know that it was him, you know?
Right.
Instead it gives us this kind of like, is that Johnny Depp?
Moment. Right.
You know, you kind of like turn to the people next to you and you're like, that's fucking Johnny Depp. What is he doing here? It's lame. And honestly, it's a waste of Colin Farrell's character, who could have been a pretty interesting villain for the series to follow going forward. Like if he was like Grindelwald's lackey or something.
That's,
you know,
what I was expecting. Yeah.
Yeah. That's what it kind of seemed like it was building towards. And then it's just like, nope, Colin Farrell's Grindelwald. And it's like, was Colin Farrell like only signed for one movie or something? Like, is that why they did this?
There must have been.
Why wasn't Colin Farrell just playing Grindelwald?
Yeah,
I would rather watch it as Grindelwald than Johnny Depp, honestly. And,
you're right.
And, like, Johnny Depp looks bad as Grindelwald. Like, he looks dumb. He has, like, a weird mustache, and, like, he's, like...
He's in his Mordecai setup.
He's just his Mordecai. Exactly.
Different contact lenses.
Yeah, it's, I don't know. That whole thing just felt like... I mean, I felt like the whole movie, like the entire climax in the movie felt like it was running out of steam, but, like, that really put it over the top. It's like, man, that sucks. This is a very bad moment. I did want to also mention the film telegraphs very early on that the source of the Obscurus or the Evil Dead camera is Ezra Miller, right? His character. But then it starts to subvert it by making us think it's his sister. And then that was something I was kind of interested in, how like Ezra Miller was kind of trying to protect his sister. But then the movie's like, nope, it was Miller all along.
Yeah.
And then he turns into a giant cloud, and that's who they have to be at the end of the movie. And so they do. And it's also odd that nobody seems to have any remorse for killing this otherwise innocent kid who couldn't control his powers. Which means this combines the climax of Fantastic Four Rise of the Silver Surfer, which is the giant cloud Galactus, with the ending of Fantastic Four 2015, where somebody tells him, hey, your name of your book should be Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them.
Yeah.
So it's like this movie should be taking cues from the Harry Potter movies, and it's instead taking cues from the Fantastic Four movies? Arguably one of the worst series of movies.
Yeah, it definitely has that, you know, like we said, the franchise building stuff, which is the worst parts of all of this comic book cinematic universe explosion of movies, and it takes those things.
Yeah, that stuff is very rarely done well. You know, it's like Marvel does it pretty well because they base them around what's happening in the movie right now. You know,
right.
With this, it's like, here's what's happening in the movie now. We're done with that. Let's talk about what's happening later.
And especially because the way the Grindelwald thing is set up. So we see that explosion happen in the beginning.
Yeah.
And then we get a bunch of newspapers fly by, and we're supposed to read headlines, but also we're shown ads. So, like, I don't know what I'm supposed to read and what I'm not supposed to read.
That was a little weird. It was like Grindelwald at large, and then it's like Hogwarts under security, and then it's like Gigglewater.
Like fireworks is another one. It's like, what? Like, I don't understand.
I will say I really like that opening though, because it starts off with the very familiar like Harry Potter tune, like da 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 da, and that kind of segues into like a new theme for this movie. It has like the classic like Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them is like against the clouds, like it was for all the Potter movies, and then it kind of segues right into this newspaper thing, and it kind of very quickly sets up like who Grindelwald is, and like it gives you the context for what's going on in this time period. And that's what I kind of liked about this, because it's you know, it's showing Scamander's story for about an hour and 20 minutes, and you have like the backdrop of Grindelwald, and like it mentions like, you know, he gets interrogated and it's like, are you one of Grindelwald's supporters or something? So like, you have this kind of like context for what's going on, and it still feels like it's its own story for a long time.
Right.
And then the last like half hour is just like, nope, no, it's not. This is all building towards Dumbledore and Grindelwald, which is like, you already know how that turns out. So it's like, well, why?
If the first half feels sort of like a Harry Potter Ghostbusters type, like just silly, we got to track this stupid stuff down that's ruining New York, like breaking buildings and things, and it's fun and it's goofy. But then, as we've said, it turns and pivots to like, nope, Now we got to deal with like literal witch hunts.
Yeah, and that stuff could be really cool too. I would be interested to see a full movie about like witch hunts in the Harry Potter universe. They've talked about that in the books before, and that could be cool. You know, like what were the Salem witch trials like? You know,
right?
Like that could be interesting. That could be cool, but it's not something that the movie spends enough time on to really warrant being in the movie at all. And you know, the ending bit where it's like Catherine Waterston's character saying goodbye to Newt Scamander, and she's like, "Oh, here's your book back." She called up Death Beast More to find them, and he's like, "Ooh, yeah, I will." And it's like,
wait, is that? I don't think that's what. I don't think I got that. I don't think we might have interpreted the scene differently.
What did you?
She hands him the book, and he's like, "Oh, yeah, I'm gonna turn in my manuscript," and she just like smiles and says, "Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them," as if she's just saying the name back to him, which is weird. And didn't make any sense, but I didn't get the implication that it was, this is what you should call it.
I mean, it felt like a moment where it was supposed to make people in the audience go, hey, that's the name of the movie.
That's 100%. It was a he said the thing moment.
And here's the thing. Like, this book, Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them, is barely referenced in the Harry Potter books. Like, it's on a list of other books that is mentioned once. Yeah. And it's not referenced in the movies at all. Right. So it's like this is not some winking thing that everyone knows about that you can just drop hints to, you know, this is like, you know, with your base, like it just feels weird. It seems like the movie thinks, oh, everybody knows Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them. This obscure book from 2001 that was released as an add on. Like, it's, you know, it's a glossary of creatures in the Harry Potter universe. You didn't read it.
Yeah. I do like we do get a lot of the or at least we get a glimpse of the U.S. stuff. Like they mention what school and how it's the best wizarding school in the world. And like,
right.
We get all that stuff, which is a lot of fun. But it does feel weird to reference, like you said, this additional material book to the Harry Potter series that doesn't technically exist in the movie yet.
Right. And they act as if it's like a massively important part of Harry Potter lore, which it's not. The thing is, the movie itself doesn't seem to think it is, because it's spending its time on Dumbledore and Grindelwald, you know? So that was a little weird. Also, I give absolutely zero shits about Kowalski's Bakery. And I am insulted that the movie thinks I care enough about it.
How could you not, though? It's so important.
The thing is, I generally liked Kowalski, but it just feels...
I just couldn't get over the fact that it's the dude from Balls of Fury. I couldn't get over that.
Yeah. When you were watching the Harry Potter movies as a young lad, did you think one day the guy from Balls of Fury will be in one of these?
That's right.
Yeah. Like, it's... You know, that's like his backstory. Like, he wants to have a bakery. And, like, he's generally the character I like the best. Like, overall, like, coming out of this movie. Like, he's easily the best character, the most interesting. But it's, like... It's a weird choice to have them wipe... Like, to have them wipe his memory and then, you know, make... give him the bakery and then, like, have Queenie come back and, seemingly jog his memory again. And it's like, why even make him lose his memory? Why not just like keep him, like tell them that they erase his memory, but then, you know, have him tag along with Newt for his next adventure or something, you know?
Yeah, it seemed only to set up the joke that his pastries are shaped like the monsters.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of it.
Yeah. Which was, like,
was funny.
That's the last shot of the movie is him and his bakery, like smiling at Queenie. So that was, you know, weird. Also, Ron Perlman plays a goblin. In the,
which was amazing.
Yeah, in the Wizarding Speakeasy, which that's cool. Like, that's a cool concept. Yeah. And that's like a cool idea, and that's like a fun little scene. But also, I will just say, the goblins in the Harry Potter films were done with makeup, and they looked very cool, and they looked very authentic. And in this movie, it's CGI, right? It's the CGI Ron Perlman goblin. So it's kind of like the orcs in the Hobbit movies.
You're
just laughing at CGI Ron Perlman goblin.
Well, I just had the mental image of Ron Perlman in makeup to look like a goblin.
And it would probably be awesome, right?
To be fair, though, they did keep Ron Perlman's chin or jaw in the goblin.
That's true. But I felt like it was a lot like the orcs in the Hobbit movies, right? Like, the orcs in the Lord of the Rings movies were all dudes in makeup and, like, costumes and stuff. And the orcs in the Hobbit movies are CGI, and they look worse. Like, they look bad, comparatively. And so I feel like this movie, I didn't want to say this, but it follows in the footsteps of the Star Wars prequels and the Hobbit movies, you know? And it's weird, because it's like, the Star Wars movies, It took 20 years to get some lousy Star Wars prequels. And then it took 10 years to get some lousy Lord of the Rings prequels. And now it only took 5 years to get some lousy Harry Potter prequels. And it's like, what's going to happen next?
What's coming in 2.5 years?
Yeah, in 2.5 years, are we getting lousy Mad Max Fury Road prequels or something?
Oh, God.
You know?
Don't even put that thought out into the universe.
Oh, man. So, again, I do think this movie is better than the Hobbit movies.
I wouldn't go so far as to put it on those levels for me.
Yeah,
But then again, I'm coming from a less invested standpoint where, right. Like, if the Hobbit movies hurt me because the Lord of the Rings is this for me.
Right. I mean, so. I have Lord of the Rings I like, but it's not my Harry Potter, you know? Right. So, but I do think this is better than the Hobbits, and it's probably better than at least two of the Star Wars prequels. I'm not going to say which two, but I don't want to start an internet argument. That said, like, there's a lot of good stories in here, you know, and they're all thrown together to try to build a franchise, and nothing's giving room to breathe. So, do you want, like, a lighthearted kids movie about animals? Do you want a darker film about Grindelwald's rise to power? Do you want a political thriller about a newspaper man's son running for office?
What the fuck was that about? Yeah. I even forgot. I just saw it, and I forgot that.
Do you want, like, social commentary about a forbidden love between a witch and a muggle? Or do you want, like, a tense psychological thriller? Because Fantastic Beasts offers all of those things and more, and it can't seem to pick just what it wants to be. Like, pick a lane, Fantastic Beasts, and just go with it.
Just to throw in the social commentary thing, that the fact that they have the president of the U.S. Ministry of Magic, whatever the word they use for it, I can't remember, the acronym for it, as a black woman in 1927 or whatever it's supposed to be.
Yeah, like, that's pretty cool.
It's fucking awesome. It's great. And they just they don't talk about it ever. Like, I guess that's kind of the point. Like, you don't want to – it's not supposed to be about that.
I mean, I think the idea is supposed to be that wizards are more progressive than muggles. But at the same time, you know, wizards are also being persecuted by muggles. Right. There are certain muggles who, like, feel like they know about witches and wizards, and then they hate them and stuff like that. And that's a very interesting thing, especially in these times when Nazis are running the government.
In the time period of the movie and now.
So, not to bring real world politics into this silly Harry Potter movie, but at the same time, the Harry Potter movies have always tackled real world politics pretty head on.
That's what art, quote unquote, cinema is supposed to do.
Yeah. And so, hopefully the sequel, because there's definitely going to be one, has a better understanding of where this franchise is headed. We're supposed to get 5 movies out of this, and right now, I don't even see how that's possible. Like, is Newt Scamander going to be in all of them? Like, how?
I want the bakery. It's just about baking now, from now on.
4 straight movies of Dan Fogler running his bakery.
Fantastic scones and where to bake them. I'm in. I'm all about it. I would watch the shit out of that.
That would be pretty great. But I don't know. It's just weird. Like, you know, I don't see the point of building up to a Dumbledore Grindelwald fight because we already know how that turns out. Unless you give us, like, new depths to mine from Dumbledore's character, because I don't care about Grindelwald at all right now. As far as I know about Grindelwald, he is a shitty Johnny Depp character.
Right. I'll ask it anyway, because we're in spoilers. Why not? What's the difference?
Yeah.
Is Dumbledore is not present at that, like, international meeting, right?
No, I don't think so, no.
I don't think so either.
But supposedly he will be in the sequel. They'll have, like, somebody cast as young Dumbledore. So there will be that to look forward to, I guess. It's just very, like...
As long as it's not Jai Courtney or somebody.
Oh, man, can you imagine? Oh, man. So that is,
we're going to leave you on that note.
That's good. I mean, unless you have more to say, I do want to mention the Fantastic Beasts, the titular Fantastic Beasts, have no bearing on what goes on in this movie. And I still don't know where to find them. So... This movie did not tell me where to find them other than scattered around New York City, I guess.
Yeah, I will say, though, that the beasts do look really cool, I think. That part of the movie is a lot of fun. Fighting that whatever, I can't remember, in the Macy's department store. Like, that was fun.
Oh, the Niffler. Yes. And that was cool to see a Niffler because, I mean, coming at this from a book's perspective, Nifflers are in the books, but they were never in a movie or anything. And so it was cool to see one. Like, you know, it's fun. But it's not something I needed to see, but it's, like, cool to see. And, like, there's It's just a fun time for a little while. You know, it's an enjoyable watch until it starts getting bogged down by franchise stuff, right. Which is disappointing. But hopefully, the sequel has a better understanding of what it wants to be. If it wants to be a dark Dumbledore versus Grindelwald thing, let it just be that. Maybe get rid of Newt Scamander entirely. And
yeah,
it'd be really funny if Newt Scamander like leaves the series, but they're still called Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them. I think.
Yeah, I think that it'd be interesting. Because, like you said, that whole plot line is very tangential to what the franchise is setting up, at least.
Yeah, so
and I think that's an interesting way to kind of stumble into this story. Like, we follow Newt Scamander, who is a very bumbling, muttery, shy dude.
Can we watch him stumble into a story for 5 movies in a row? You know?
Oh, no, I'm not saying that. I'm saying it's interesting. This would be an interesting way to come into this Grindelwald story, and then he leaves, and now we follow this story.
Yeah, but then like,
which hopefully they decide what they do. I don't know.
Hopefully. I mean, from what I hear, like, I think he's back in the sequel, and I think most of the characters in this movie are back too. So I really don't know. Supposedly, what I know about the sequel is that young Dumbledore will be in it. Grindelwald will have a bigger role, and also it'll be in Paris instead of New York. Sure. So like, whatever. Yeah. And yeah, you know, I hope that it builds upon the potential. There's a lot of potential in this movie that goes untapped, you know?
Yeah.
And so I hope it can build upon the potential into something that's good. But, you know, I'm really afraid that we're staring down the barrel of another Hobbit, you know?
I'm at least tentatively excited to see what happens in Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them.
At the very least, we're going to have a lot of fun making fun of this name for a really long time.
For a while.
So I think on that note, we can wrap it up. Mike, where can we find you online this week?
You can find me on twitter.com/mdfilmblog. And if you like Dungeons & Dragons, my friends and I post our games at youtube.com/geonerd79.
And you can find me online at twitter.com/msmithfilmblog and all of my podcasts and stuff at filmbook.com. Thank you so much for listening to Filmbookcast. I'm Mike Smith. That's Mike DeCree Show. If you are listening to this review via our podcast on iTunes, please subscribe to the podcast, rate it, and take a moment to give us a review. Any and all feedback, compliments, topic discussions, and even hate mail can be sent directly to podcast@filmbook.com. Please list the podcast you are emailing about in the title of your email, because we produce just so many different ones, hard to keep track. We would love to hear from you. Join us in 2 weeks, where we'll be discussing some Fantastic Beasts. No, we won't. This is the copy from last week. I actually don't know what we're going to be reviewing in 2 weeks. I think La La Land might be opening up, and if that's the case, I think that's probably what we should do. But if it does, like, I don't know if it's wide or not, is the thing.
I'm not sure. I do want to see that. But so here's the thing. We're also getting to the time of the year where every movie ever comes out, and I want to see all of them.
Yes, that's the problem. So we might just, like, throw a dart on the wall or something and see what sticks.
Join us the next episode and find out what we're reviewing.
Yes. Join us in 2 weeks. We'll be reviewing something.
That's right.
And you can check out our next Complete Works next week, where we're going to be talking about Nicolas Cage's role in Face Off, which I'm very excited about, Mike. I know you are too.
It's here.
So that is going to be very exciting. Thank you guys so much for listening. We are out. But this is all so sad. I mean, my mom and dad were killed long ago. Long ago they died. I want to recycle, but being unliked is all I know. All he knows, that's why. I never thought it'd be a part of such a fate. An opportunity 11 years late. I guess it's time for me to step up to the plate and show him that I'm something great. I'm Harry freaking Potter.